the Arizona Area Turbocharger Recovery Workshop. This workshop is hosted by the Arizona Area of Al-Anon, and our intention is to help members take their recovery to the next level, or at least up a notch. We'll open with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We will be meeting for an hour and a half. We will have two speakers on the topic, followed by a Q&A session.
Has anybody seen Mike? I don't see him on the call. Well, let's wing it.
All right.
I'll play Mike for the evening, if you don't mind. It's great to see everybody here. And as you listen to our speakers, feel free to send me any questions for them in the chat. The speakers are going to be available after their talks to answer any questions and hopefully to give you a better understanding of how celebration of success, fear of commitment might turbocharge your recovery. So send me your questions, click in the upper right-hand corner of my video and select chat, and don't forget to let me know who the question is for. We may have time for a couple of people to share for 2 minutes. So if you have some experience, strength, and hope on the topic and you were willing to speak, please let me know. Also, consider supporting the Arizona Area, who is sponsoring this, by donating to our contributions page. I'll post that in the chat after I'm done. And lastly, thank you all so much for being here and being an active part of this workshop. Now get ready with your mind wide open and full throttle and prepare to allow your spiritual fuel tank to be filled with high power octane. So now I'll turn it back over to our workshop chairperson, Kay, and drivers, start your engine.
Thank you. I have asked Patrick to please read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Patrick. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic.
Maureen, if you would please read the workshop opening.
Excuse me. When I first considered reaching out to others, I might hesitate. Didn't I come to Al-Anon to focus on my individual experience, to seek my own recovery? Wouldn't contributing to the common good just divert me from personal progress? After finally learning to focus on myself, wouldn't helping others distract me from that goal? In helping others, we drop any pretense that I alone am in charge of my separate recovery. We acknowledge the common bond that unites us in the program, and we take steps, however halting and uneven, to align ourselves with the guidance of a higher power. Excuse me. By passing on the guidance we have received, I'm sorry, somebody else is going to have to finish.
All right, I will take that. Service and recovery are not independent of each other. Both are part of the spiritual awakening that continues to guide us. The more willing we become to practice all of this program, the more progress we can make in recovering from the effects of one another's alcoholism and in living our lives more fully. What we may not notice beyond our fears is that Al-Anon gives us a chance to do either just a little or a lot. At first, we may experience some discomfort, but we can go at a pace that doesn't leave us overwhelmed. As we progress, we begin to notice the other side of service. We are learning and growing at an extraordinary pace. Rick, can you do the reading from When I Got Busy, I Got Better?
Certainly. Hi, everybody. I'm Ricky. View of making a commitment. When I first came to Al-Anon, I appreciated the flexibility. I could come later, leave early, attend meetings anytime, or skip them anytime as well. Nobody needed to know my schedule. Nobody depended on me. When I began to explore service opportunities, I was afraid of losing this flexibility and freedom. Would I feel trapped? But I began to notice that service didn't destroy flexibility. I still have the support of the members of my group. If I couldn't keep a commitment, I could ask for help. And if I discovered a job was interfering with my life, I could step away without blame. I didn't get a report card or a job evaluation. In addition, my duties were always clearly defined and limited in duration. Nobody asked me to take on extra jobs or to extend my commitments. To my surprise, my commitments gave me a chance to get better acquainted with the members of my group. I gained a new flexibility in my relationships with them and a new freedom as my sense of acceptance grew. I often felt better after a meeting, whether I had really felt like attending or not, for I was welcome no matter how I was feeling. From When I Got Busy, page 4, copyright Al-Anon Family Groups.
Thanks everyone for doing our opening readings. Each of our 3 panelists will share for 15 minutes, and the rest of the time will be used for your questions and possibly brief shares. Remember, any sharings are solely the opinion of the member and not that of the Arizona area or Al-Anon as a whole. But now I'd like to introduce our first speaker, who is Rick. Rick, please unmute and share.
Yeah, thanks, Kate. Hi, everybody. I'm a slowly recovering Al-Anon. My name is Rick, and I am my own qualifier. Lovely to be with you tonight. Happy to say that I've been a continuous member of Al-Anon since the 10th day of April, 1987. I came all those years ago because I felt the heat, and I'm staying because I see the light. I heard a fellow say one time, I want to see how good this can get. And I firmly, that's my new mantra. I want to see how good this whole thing can get. I live just outside of Toronto, Canada, and it's a lovely to be with you there in wherever we are in Arizona. It's kind of something, you know, you'll tell people that, hey, you know, I'm doing a share on Zoom, and they'll say where. And I said, I'm sitting in my office. It really doesn't matter where. We've kind of stripped away all of that stuff. We just kind of click on a button and there we are someplace on the planet. And the thing that's amazing about that is no matter where we are on the planet, we all kind of do this as we start to share. It's the power of identification, the head nod. And so it's a wonderful, I'm not even quite sure how I got here, but somebody sent me an email. So I said, yeah, I'd like to do it. And so here I am. So I'll get right into this. This is like a speed talk tonight. And so you had that little quote there from our book, When I Got Busy, I Got Better. So I dug it out, and the one I'm using was my mother's. My mother died about 6 years ago, but she was a 47-year member of Al-Anon. And the book, the one that I have, is from 1994. So just, it was a beautiful little memory of my mom just kind of digging out this book. So I just wanted to comment before I share on some of my own personal experience, just about a few things in this reading that popped out at me. And it kind of says, when I first came to Al-Anon, I appreciated the flexibility. I love flexibility. I'm a guy that loves to live in gray. But then the writer goes on to say, I could come late, leave early, attend meetings anytime, and skip them anytime as well. To me, that sounds like profound selfishness. And that's exactly who I was. That I could do anything I wanted, whenever I wanted, regardless of what anybody else thought of it. And that's not flexibility. That's a trap. That's the cage of my disease right there. And so the irony is that the writer says, you know, if I started to make a commitment to service when I feel trapped, it's the flip. When I start to make the commitment to service, I start to feel the freedom. start to feel the freedom that's offered to us in this fellowship. Because I'm trapped by my disease. I'm trapped by my illness. I'm trapped by my selfishness of thinking I can do whatever I want, whenever I want, regardless of what you want me to do. And that really jumped out at me. And then down at the bottom, it says, to my surprise, my commitments gave me a chance to get better acquainted. And isn't that what we all want? That's what I wanted. I wanted contact. I wanted to know you. So I thank you for those people who have their screens on. If you don't, and if I'm just seeing your name in a black square, maybe you could turn it on. I'd love to see you. If you've ever done a Zoom talk, you'll know what it's like. But if you never have, this is what it's like. Get a shower, get dressed, put your toes against the baseboard of the wall, put your nose against the wall, and then share. That's what it's like when there's all these black squares on the screen. So just love, we come here to connect. And that's what this writer's saying. My commitments gave me a chance to get better acquainted. My commitments gave me a chance to know the fellowship. And there's a warning in that I love the fellowship, but the fellowship is not my recovery. But it's a really an absolutely essential element of it. And then the last thing is, I think the most divine wisdom we have and the most challenging wisdom, where it says, I often felt better after a meeting, whether I had really felt like attending or not. And there's the key. My sponsor said that to me right from the beginning. She said, Rick, you don't think your way into right action. You act your way into right thinking. And the actions I take, I have to take some actions that I may not necessarily feel like doing. You know, at the end of our preamble, it says, at the closing, it says, take what you like and leave the rest. Well, I did that for too long. And that's a perfect definition of my illness. Take what I like and leave the rest. What I need to do, this isn't a buffet. It's like a fixed price menu. I need to take it all. I might not use it all right now, but I need to be willing to take it all. And kind of being in service is one of those things. And doing things I didn't necessarily want to do is one of those too. So the reason I do service is this. Because in step one, it tells me, and I need you to admit it, that I am powerless over alcohol and my life has become unmanageable. That means that I have a disease. My disease is called alcoholism, the family disease. I'm not a codependent. I don't have a qualifier. I'm not an adult child of an alcoholic. I have something. And that's why these steps work for me. And if they work for me, that means that I want to continue to get them to work. And so when I get down to 12, I have a problem and I need a solution. It's that simple. And the solution is taking the spiritual action of Al-Anon, taking the spiritual action of those 12 steps. And it gets to 12 and it gives me the promise and it gives me the assignment. And the assignment is carry the message. Carry the message in any way that you can. And oftentimes when we do these workshops, the service workshop is about kind of being involved in titled service. But there's much more to it than that. There's a great reading here on March 18th in our Courage to Change book. I'll just take a few little bits out of it. As Al-Anon members, our own experience, strength, and hope is all we need to help one another recover from the devastating impact of alcoholism. And that's all I need to be involved in service. Who I am is good enough. And I think I love the direction of your workshop here. I wrote it, celebration of success. That's such a positive, beautiful way to frame this workshop that you're doing, every couple of weeks. I love it. And that's where we need to stay, is focused on our success. And then it goes on to say, service encourages me to help those who really want help. I've spent so much time and energy trying to help those who didn't want it. Do you remember that? Remember trying to help all those people that didn't want the help? I was helping them so because I thought they needed it, or really I was helping them because that's my disease. I'm hurting. You're doing something I don't like. I want you to change so I'll be better. Working in service, I'm actually helping people that really want to be helped. I'm learning to give and receive without guilt. And lastly, this is a beautiful quote in our Courage to Change, March 18th. The only ones among you who will be really happy are those who will have sought and found how to serve. And Al-Anon is beautiful. It's showing us ways that we can serve. Certainly being involved in service at the group, let's call it area service, and all of the ways that functions is one of those. But there's some others. And in these brief moments that I have, I just like to kind of outline them. So the 12 steps says, you know, I tried to carry, doesn't mean that what really means to me is that I carry the message, and then the result is up to God. And I carry that message in many different ways. So I see that here's one of the first ways that I can be of service is talking to a newcomer. Remember when we had newcomers? Remember when we were physically at a meeting and actually somebody walked in hurting? Remember that? Every one of us. And I'm thinking of one person in my group can remember somebody who came in, their head, their eyes firmly planted on the floor, wouldn't look at anybody. And so we kind of go up and just say hello and welcome them. I won't say this woman's name. And over time, we start to see them improve and we continue to welcome them and talk to them. I remember this one person in particular, I'm sitting at the meet my home group, which is the Oakville Saturday Morning Al-Anon Family Group. And in she comes and she's standing tall and she's looking ahead and she's smiling and she's saying hello. That is the best service we can do to that person that comes in. Remember when we came the first time hurting. And you know what? There's longtime members that come who are hurting. We still need that. I talked to a fellow I sponsored this morning. He's having a hard time at the moment. We had a great chat. We can continue to reach out no matter how long we've been here. So there's the first one. Let's kind of get out there. And if we're having a newcomers meeting at our meeting, kind of get involved in that. Talk to the newcomer before and after. That is a beautiful, beautiful form of service. Just kind of reaching out, connecting with the fellowship, getting out of myself. It's not so much, that's freedom. Freedom is connection. And so the second one is I view my membership in my group, Rick J, member, Oakville Saturday Morning Al-Anon Family Group, as a service position. And that it is the group that I attend. I say it's my group. It's not my group, but it's the group I go to. So I say it's my group. And that means I have a responsibility to that group to make sure it functions. And so I'm there on Saturday mornings now on Zoom. When we were meeting live, I'm there shaking hands. I'm putting out some coffee. I'm putting the slogans out. I'm volunteering to do things in the group. That is a service job. And that connects me with others and it connects me with my God. And I don't have to be all the way to step 12 to start that. I can do that right from the beginning. We can say that to a newcomer. Stand at the door and shake somebody's hand. I don't know how to do that. It's pretty simple. Put out your hand and say hello. That's it. That's a very, very, very good place to begin, especially for people if you're like me who love to isolate and are kind of want to connect with people but are so afraid of people. I want to connect with you, but I'm going to push you away. As I heard one guy say it on the Zoom thing, he said, isn't it so weird that we want to connect and the answer to our connection is to isolate? Oh my God, what is kind of whacked out thinking is that? That's kind of, there's the recovery that I need to get over. And so as we kind of get into this thing, our service opportunities expand. So we get requests and opportunities come. And so I remember I had an opportunity one time that one came to me in 2005. We had the AA International Conference with Al-Anon participation here in Toronto. And so I got a call from the Toronto Star, this big daily newspaper, saying, would you like to write your Al-Anon story for the put it in the newspaper so that right around the conference time, it was very, very appropriate. So I did that. And what a fantastic way to reach out. When I kind of use that example, when I'm talking about traditions, I'll say I really kept the anonymity thing really well because I signed it with my third name and my initial, signed it Thomas J, and wrote the story out. And then my mother was alive. And after she read the story in the Toronto Star on the Saturday, she called me and she said, hey, did you read that article in the paper? I said, yeah. And she said, do you know who that was? I said, no, I don't know who it was, but I sure would like to meet that person. She said, yeah, me too. I thought, mission accomplished, anonymity kept. Even my mother didn't know who it was. So it was service of the purest kind of service. Here's my story, and here's the recovery. Here's the hope. Here's the growth that I have found here in this beautiful, beautiful fellowship. And then there's involvement in the structure. And I've been all through the structure. I even had to write it down, all the things I did. Here they are. Been a GR, a DR, three coordinators, Alateen, CPC at the time. And then I was probably one of the most enjoyable service jobs I ever had was I was the chairperson of our first area Al-Anon conference. I loved that one. I was the area chairperson. I was the host committee chair for that international convention. I coordinated with the Al-Anon World Service to kind of do the hosting for Al-Anon worldwide. It was fantastic. been a the Al-Anon chair for an AA conference a couple of times. So they're beautiful, beautiful experiences. And the growth from them has been profound. When I was a GR in Al-Anon early on in 1988, around there, I went to this, it was a great, great meeting, and we were very active. So we'd have these things called eating meetings, where we would discuss all the things that we needed to do to get our group running. It was a spectacular collaboration of decision-making. That was such a learning process for me. When I was the Trillium chair, you know, like it's, Bill has that article in Concept 9 about leadership. It's amazing. Here's a program that tells us don't go anywhere near AA stuff. And in our concept book, there's a full quote from the founder of AA. It's absolutely fantastic. But it's talking about having vision. It's talking about being a leader. And so I got to practice and exercise that vision when I was the area, we call it the Trillium Convention. I was the chairperson of that. And I put a team together. And I remember when the conference day came, I had nothing to do. And that was exactly the way it was supposed to happen. Because everybody else had their job and everybody was doing their job. I was just kind of wandering around enjoying the conference. And when I was the area chair, I learned a fantastic thing. Rick, keep your mouth shut. Listen to people without having an opinion. And if you have an opinion, don't let it show on your face. Don't even think about the opinion, because you really need to honestly, unbiased, hear what members have to say on both sides of any kind of discussion we want to have. And the funny thing is, I can remember virtually none of the topics, but I remember in detail the process, the beautiful process of honoring each person's opinion and input and allowing us all to see how that works. And I saw on a couple of occasions, a whole room that was going one direction and one person had the courage to stand up and say something else. And I wasn't influencing anything, just guiding people through, and the whole room went another way. What a gorgeous, gorgeous experience that was. I'm so, so glad that I have it. And so carrying on, I'm running, I got 1 minute. I told you, this is like a speed talk. And sponsoring, being a sponsor, that is service. And I sponsor 8 men. I have a sponsor and I sponsor 8 guys very, very actively. And I love it. It is kind of an ongoing connection, spirituality, working the Al-Anon program, not just the activities of Al-Anon, but the actual spiritual program of it. For many years, I was on a board of a treatment center. For me, I took that as 12-step work of carrying the message that the family deserves their own recovery. The family is not just an adjunct to the alcoholic. The family, I have my own recovery needs, because apart from wherever any alcoholic might be, I'm still doing all of this crazy stuff. And lastly, what I'm doing right now, if you get asked to share, you share. That is service too, have an opportunity to share my experience. And so I'm very, very grateful to do that whenever I have a chance. 15 minutes and 58 seconds. Whew. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And Kitty, you are now on.
Thanks, Rick. You're a hard act to follow. There's no doubt about that. I, like you, I went into Al-Anon being pushed and shoved. I almost turned around and went back 3 different times home. And I thought, well, if I go to the meeting, I dump all my crap, I can leave and never go back. I didn't know that there was more to it. And one of the girls was there, and she reached out to me and told me, she gave me her phone number. And she said, my number's not on the list, but I would really, really appreciate if you would call me. So I called her, because when I make a commitment, I do what I say. And she became my very first sponsor, and I kept going to meetings after meetings. I was so sick when I first came in that I needed to have a meeting every night, whether it be AA, you know, as a family member, or Al-Anon. And that was great for me. I just kept me busy. When I kept busy, I got better, because I was around the type of people who understood me and what and didn't judge me for anything that was going on in my life, that I was handling it wrong or whatever. I have been in the program for 11 years, My husband was a qualifier, my son. And my son during the COVID relapsed and called me one day and told me he was going to put himself into recovery. I didn't even know he was drinking because we live in different states. But I'm going to go back to when I first started in the meeting. I started in this meeting, didn't know anything about it. And this lady came up and says to me, I think you'd make a wonderful GR. Well, I just thought that was the best thing in the whole wide world. And so I did that. And then they also said, would you like to take the key? So I took the key. And that meant that I had to be there. Because if I wasn't there to open the door, nobody else, you know, could have a meeting. And that was a large commitment, honestly, when I look back on it. I was at a 4th of July party with a bunch of Al-Anon people. And I had to leave because I had the key to go open up the door. And there was one newcomer that came in. So God wanted me to be there for her. But that was a great service opportunity for me. And then I have had a lot of, you know, treasure. They said, would you be the treasure? Of course I'll be the treasure, no problem. And one other thing, and then another meeting, it seemed like I was doing almost everything. And what I realized through that was we need to reach out to other people to help do a lot of the different things that need to be done, because the meeting will not survive if one person controls it. And that's why we need to change positions all the time. We do it once a year, and I think that's tremendous. And unfortunately, now that we're not meeting, it makes it very, very hard. Anyhow, I definitely recommend rotating positions, because that way everyone has a chance. And one of the things when I did service was that it said somewhere in there, and I actually don't have the book, but about leaving early or not showing up or not feeling like going. When you, well, first of all, if you don't feel like going, you better go because you need it. And so a lot of times that made me committed to going to the meeting, whether I really chose to or not, because I had a job to do, whether it was collecting money, whether it was being a secretary or whatever. And then I was in program not too long, and one of the girls said to me, we have this long-timers meeting, which means we have all the Al-Anon members, and we have all these speakers, and we have a potluck, and it's a big affair. And one of the girls looked at me, and she says, I think you should be in charge of all the decorations and all the supplies. And so I said, okay, well, it was a big job. And by that time I had sponsees, and one of them helped me tremendously. And we put that on and it came off really, really good. And we only had less than $100 to work with. And it was like, and we weren't to use any of our own money. So that was a real challenge. But that was very, very rewarding. I am a widow from this disease. My husband was killed in a car accident, drunk. And I had two children. And I became very, very obsessed with them and what they did. And if I hadn't gotten busy in Al-Anon, I would have constantly been obsessing about them and trying to control their lives. And after I got in program, I realized there is nothing I can do. There isn't one thing I can do to change anything. And I have to go through step 1, 2, and 3 almost every day and just turn it over to my higher power, which is God. And this program has just really, really taught me that. And I, to keep myself in service right now with this, I still meet with most of my sponsees. I had lunch with one today, and I go to a meeting, and I also meet with my sponsor every single solitary week. And that's what's keeping me going right now, because I live alone and I really miss people, and I miss the meeting after the meeting, which is so much fun. And you learn so much. And that was really, really important to me. And a lot of people think about service. Service is anything, like Rick said, as far as shaking someone's hand, greeting the newcomer, because that's a really hard thing to walk through those doors and not know anyone. And then also not wanting anyone to know who you are and why you're there, because at least I came from a family where everything was always private. And I have actually remained that way pretty much, except with my Al-Anon family. So when that person came in and greeted me at the door, it was an elderly gentleman, and he still comes to our meetings. It just made me feel like I was really, truly welcome. And it wasn't a click. And he was just very open and couldn't say enough nice things to me and introduced me to some of the other people. So I felt a part of the meeting. I didn't feel like, you know, I was just there. So that really made a huge difference for me. And with service, you know, whether you go get literature, whether or not, you know, you're a treasurer, a secretary, a GR, whatever the situation may be, it's important for us to have all these positions in order to keep our meetings going. And we do need to rotate them, as I said earlier. And then I, too, was an EMEAS. And I was an EMEAS for 7 years. And I loved it. I loved the kids. And it was in, first of all, it was in the grade school. And then we moved with the kids to the high school. And unfortunately, now with everything being closed down, I miss these kids. Because we're going to get together for a luncheon, but I don't get to see them anymore. But we do hear from them. And I think we did a lot in their lives. I know they did a lot for me, because I always felt gratified when I got through working with them. We had one boy in our group that was in a foster care, not a foster care, a group home. He was in a group home. And he basically, his mother had died from this disease on the street. And his father, he had no idea where he was at. He only saw him twice. So to him, these meetings and my girlfriend and myself were very important to him. And he just grew leaps and bounds. And talk about service and gratification. That was just so wonderful to see this happen. But we had several of them in there. So anyone that has never been in EMEAS, which is an Elohim sponsor, you know, do it if you have the opportunity, because the kids are very grateful. And that probably was one of the biggest service projects that I did, other than daily groups. I didn't go up any higher than just the groups. And I know a lot of people, and it's always been enjoyable for me. And I have learned a lot. My son, again, is sober, has a wonderful job, talked to me today, and he's also in counseling, and seems like he's right now on the right path. And there again, I have to turn that over to God every single day. And I stay out of his business. Before I came to Al-Anon, I would be in everybody's business. And today, I try to stay in my own hula hoop And if they want to tell me something, they tell me something. And I still have a lot of different girls that call me. And we still stay in touch. In fact, one of the girls I met, she sent me a really, really nice note and told me how much she's thinking about me, which is a service you can do to help someone else that's alone. It was just so precious to receive that in the mail. And there's just so many little things you can do for people, and it's all service. And to just reach your hand out and help another person when you don't know what they're going through. Whether or not they need groceries or whatever you can do to help them. So I try to do as much of that as I possibly can. So anyhow, I don't know how much my 15 minutes is. I'm on my phone. But that'll pass.
Thank you, Kitty. Serenity, you are up next. If you would please unmute and share.
Hello, everyone. My name is Serenity. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. First of all, thank you, Kay and Helene, for inviting me to speak tonight, and also the Turbo Charge Your Recovery Workshop Committee. This is a really fantastic workshop that you guys have put together. I really appreciate being a part of this. Also, I want to thank Rick, Jay, and Kitty for your powerful shares and experience, strength, and hope. I feel very honored to get to speak with you tonight, despite all of my fears of committing to speaking publicly. Tonight, I'll share just a little bit about what my fear surrounding commitment looks like, how I try to quiet those fears, what I try to do to quiet those fears, and what it looks like for celebrating my success in recovery today. I started out being a commitmentophobe. I've always been a commitmentophobe all of my life. That doesn't mean that I'm afraid of hard work. In fact, it's quite the opposite. I really love hard work, accomplishing challenging tasks, solving hard problems. I just really don't like the feeling of being chained to something indefinitely or feeling like I'm a hostage to a commitment that I can't back out of. Another large contributor to my preconceived fears is that once I speak the words and they fall out of my mouth, and once I commit to something, and I'm locked in. I was once convinced that, if I said it out loud, and that was it, that's what I meant. That was the final answer, Regis, no changing my mind, no turning back. And also a weird way too, I think it was a lot about me flexing my power and showing that I have choices and showing that I have control and power, trying to feel powerful in situations, I think is why I was so fearful of committing to somebody, or something that somebody had set up. So it also meant that, I'd find these little workarounds, sure, yes, I'll be there, but I'm not really going to be fully committed. I'll do it, but I don't really want a job title, and I was used to having one foot out the door and having exit ramps and excuses laid out everywhere. My fear of commitment stems from childhood. Both of my parents were addicts. And they led a life of sex, drugs, rock and roll, alcohol. The theme was with them, party, have fun, and feel no pain. There were a lot of good times with crazy parents like that for us kids, but I picked up on patterns and learned to predict with precision and accuracy how something would go based on their level of inebriation or their level of where the party's gonna be. I had to become an adult at a very young age and learn that making plans and commitments was just not it never worked out for me. If I wanted to go or be picked up from school or go to a friend's house, participate in activities, I could not count on my mom and dad. They were too loaded, or I had to come home to take care of my sister or make dinner and be responsible. I learned how to be very responsible. Today, to rewrite all of those paths and to get to recovery, I have to go through recovery. And what that means is, if I want to get past my commitment of fears, I have to go to it and I have to go through it. The way that I inoculate myself against this in more detail is just having a willingness to try out new experiences and remembering not to use any of my old maps. When I start assuming and expecting things to turn out one way or the other, is exactly when I cheat myself of the best experiences and growth yet to come. I've got to go through it, or I've got to go to it and go through it to prove to myself that the world is not always hurtful and I can't predict what's going to go on. I have to give myself new data, new experiences to draw from to rewrite all of my painful ones. In doing that, I have also developed a totally different relationship with my past experiences, and I've been able to heal from them in a lot of ways. And service work has been that guided path to it and through it all. I'll tell you a little service position story. In 2019, early 2019, maybe even the end of 2018, a service position kind of just fell into my lap. At that time, I was new in Al-Anon, just learning how to show up, you know, barely getting my feet wet, you know, doing my thing, being sort of a commitmentophobe. And my sponsor had encouraged me to reach out to some people, you know, to start building connections with people. And I was like, okay, I guess I can do that, you know. And so at the time, there was this woman who was roundup chair for the roundup, the 2020 AA spring roundup, or you guys might call it convention. She was the chairperson for the roundup to come. And I thought, wow, I'd really like to get to know her. I really like her shares, you know, I've been coming to meetings with her, and I'd really like to get to know her. So I volunteered to be her co-chair, thinking really nothing of it, and I also told her too, like, I don't know, not really, like, co-chair sounds really big, you know, maybe I could just be your sidekick or something. But anyhow, it turns out that I wouldn't get to know her at all, because she ended up having to step down as roundup chair. And I ended up becoming the de facto roundup chair, because I was really the only person who had shown any interest in service whatsoever. So despite my sponsor's best advice, you know, I was elected the roundup chair, being a newcomer in Al-Anon, you know, still really only about a year and a half maybe in the program. I was like, whatever, I can do this. All of a sudden, just, you know, like, I can do this. So I took it on, and little did I know why she was advising me not to be part of an AA roundup committee for a convention. It turns out that there were a lot of difficult personalities on this particular roundup committee. It was also my first real exposure to the realm of service work and cooperating with AA. I didn't really know that that was even a thing. Like, I didn't realize that I had no idea how to cooperate with AA. It took a lot of learning for me. I really had to reach out to a lot of different people to find out how to just sit there through those meetings and not not want to jump in and participate and just control everything and, oh, we should do it this way. And I really had to learn how to back off. And I really had to learn to sit with a lot of discomfort and just emotionally marinate and stuff and not do anything about it and not take it on too. There were definitely a lot of fears, you know. There, it was scary being in a committee meeting with a room full of AA members, me being the only Al-Anon representation. This was an AA roundup with Al-Anon participation. And so it was typically just me, but, and I wanted to run. I didn't want to be seen. I didn't want to be heard necessarily. You know, it was that battle of, oh, you know, push and pull struggle. But I didn't run, I didn't bail, I stayed, I kept coming back, and I ended up coming back, but I came with reinforcements. I recruited somebody to start coming with me so that I just have somebody to process with. You know, this has always been such a we program, you know, and I started learning that through the roundup process, being the chairperson for that. And so I learned that, you know, I can cooperate with AA. Like, I have a voice. I can stand for myself and not against others. And I also learned how to take all of that stuff back into my family system. I learned that I don't have to do all of the work, even though I thought I secretly loved doing all of the work and it made me feel powerful. And it showed me too, this blind spot that I didn't know, and just revealed to me this beautiful thing. And I think it's kind of been touched on and shared tonight that, you know, like, I really love working together with people, and watching how others play out their roles and find their own wells of resilience and brilliance and courage. That's how I learn, is by watching other people. And what a gift and a beautiful process to be able to witness. And then I even have the awareness to look for it, observe it, and learn from it. And it's so amazing. I've learned all of this stuff by committing to service. And the roundup actually didn't even end up happening. This program has really given me so many creative ways to build trust in making commitments, all in my own time. I had to start out super small. As it has been shared tonight, there are so many ways to carry the message. I started out by just committing to my home group, you know, just suit up and show up and look alert, my sponsor would remind me all the time. That was my commitment. That was my mantra, you know, before I started taking on larger service opportunities. That was my way of being a part of and being of service at that time, you know, and I learned how to build just these tiny little micro connections. You know, it was also shared tonight too about, you know, like, meeting the newcomer, encouraging people to come back, you know, just that one little smile or that one tiny little micro connection with somebody, you know, that's me carrying the message. That's me committing to my home group. And that's me. That's me showing up and suiting up and looking alert, as my sponsor would say. And slowly growing through these, I can now say that I am definitely a woman of commitment. Doesn't matter where I started or how, you know, how I got into service. It's just that I started somewhere, you know, in my small little home group in Bozeman, Montana. I remain active in my home group today. I was just elected to be alt GR for 2021. And I'm really excited to be committed to that person or that position. I'm really excited to be of service now. I'm not afraid anymore. I've been inoculated from the fear of commitment by going to recovery and going through recovery. I hope that I can remain active. It's now, I know too much now. It's part of my basic human need. I need service. I need to be a part of. I need to be working my program, letting other people work their programs, letting other people be cooperative and participating too, in order for me to remain flexible. You know, we talked a lot tonight about flexibility. The spirit and the essence of this program for me is just all about we. It's not a self-help program. This is a we program. And sometimes I can't commit to just me, but I always can commit now to we. Now I want to show people and my home group and the Al-Anon community that I'm committed. I want to show that I am a part of and that I'm willing to go to recovery and through recovery with all of you. I think that's about it for time. Thank you guys so much for inviting me and being a part of this opportunity and helping me commit. I could not have done it without all of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Shirley. I will now turn this over to our moderator, Mike, who will use the rest of the time to get your questions answered.
Thank you, Kay. Yes, those are really great shares. Thank you, Rick and Kitty and Serenity, for your experience, strength, and hope in terms of service and participation. And thank you for saying yes again to speaking. I know that sometimes can be daunting. So we do have a few questions that have come in so far, and I'll kind of spread them around to each of you, and some of specific for each of you, and we'll have all three of you answer some. So Kitty, could I start with you? Because we had a question come on, Kitty, about how do you become an Ameas? How do you get involved in Alateen? What's the process to do that?
I'm in the Phoenix area, and I don't know where everyone is. And we have classes that we have to take in order to become an Ameas. You have to be in the program for 2 years of good standing. And then you go through that program, and then there's certain places that have an Alateen program, and every Alateen meeting has to have two of the S's there. And that's basically all you have to do to go through it. Now, I did it with the schools, which was a little bit more difficult because we had to go through the school districts. We had to make sure we had insurance. We had to make sure we had an okay from the school. It was a little bit more intense, but actually it's a very simple process, and they're always looking for Ameas to help with the Alateen meetings. And I don't know who asked the question. I don't know where they're at, but they always have. But now with COVID, I can't really answer that, but they have Ameas classes that come up all the time. And you go through the class, and they kind of walk you through and help you along on how to deal with the children.
Great. Thank you, Kitty. I appreciate that. We have another question now for Rick. Did you have any fears before your first participation in service, and how did you move through those fears, Rick?
It sounded like a smart-ass answer, but no, I didn't have any. I was just excited to do it. I was, the recovery was moving along, and I was just excited to continue to be involved in what this is. And so the any fears that I had were far deeper than just having a position or shaking somebody's hand or anything like that. It really came from the, I really believe that the kernel of excitement for service comes from my own personal recovery. And the more that I'm recovering, the more I'm eager and keen to kind of take on anything like that. If I can work through the fears of my life in doing a fearless moral inventory and actually sharing that with another human being and standing in front of another human being and making an amend for my boneheaded behavior, taking on shaking somebody's hand at a meeting or to being a GR or a DR, even the chairperson, was frankly, it paled in comparison to it. So for me, it was excitement at the opportunity to give back and to serve.
Thank you, Rick. The next question is for Serenity. What lessons of service have you been able to apply to your life?
Thanks, Mike. This is a great question. Man, so many lessons. All of them, really, I have been able to apply to my life. You know, I've learned to stand up for myself, have a voice, you know, not stand, you know, against people, but stand up for myself. I didn't word that very well, but I also have learned how to cooperate with people. I think that's been one of my biggest lessons, is that, as I said in my share, you know, this is a WE program, and it has learned, or I have learned, how to embrace, you know, all of the WE program in all of my affairs. You know, I get to see how people are cooperative and resilient and brilliant, you know, when they bring their own work and their own experience, strength, and hope to the table. And I think that's one of my favorite lessons that I've learned from being of service.
Great. Thank you, Serenity. This is a question for all three of you. And so, Kitty, I'll start with you. How did your higher power help you in your service positions?
That's a good question. That's a real good question. I wouldn't have been able to do any type of service without my higher power. When I took on the job, like I said, for the long-timers meeting, I walked into it blind, and I prayed a lot. I asked him to help me. And like I said, we had less than $100 to work. And I don't know, we had over 150 people there, and we had all these tables and tablecloths, and somehow or other, it just all came together. And I just know that he's going to lead, guide, and direct me. If he brought me to it, he's going to walk me through it. And that's what I do as far as the service. I ask God to direct me. And one of the other things that I've learned how to do is listen, and listen to other people who have done it before me, to also help me. That has helped me an awful lot. So with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Kitty. Rick, how about you? How has your higher power worked in to help you in your service positions?
Well, it's not compartmentalized. It's my relationship with the God that I understand. It's actually, I don't understand that God. The more spiritual awakening I have, kind of the less I really understand it, but the more I believe it. And so it's not that that my understanding or my relationship with God helped me necessarily a service. My relationship with God helps me in absolutely everything I do. That's the hook that I hang my hat on. So like in my regular life, if I'm experiencing challenge, I say, God, help me with this. There I go to trust. I go to faith that we'll do it. We'll do all of the legwork. But God, you're gonna help have the result. What's that? There's that great saying. We plan events, not results. And so when I was planning that first area convention, we had never had one of them, Al-Anon convention before. And boy, we were going on faith. We had raised enough money to kind of kick the thing off, but we had no idea how many people were going to show. And so it was faith that carried us through. And it's just a belief that Al-Anon members would want to have a convention focused on their own recovery, where we would be more than a guest of AA. I happily go to an AA conference as a guest, but we wanted to have something more. We wanted to create something that said, its very existence would say, our recovery is first and foremost for us. And so we were going on the faith and the belief of that. And it worked out a charm. We had almost 1,100 people come to the first one. And when it was all said and done, the area was thrilled because after we paid all our expenses, I gave them 10 grand. So they were really, really happy about that. They said, Rick, we want that kind of faith. But it worked out. But it was the faith that carried us through. And that carries it through on everything. Every time I have one of these Zoom talks to do, okay, God, come with me. I just have faith that this is going to work out exactly the way it's meant to. And so my higher power helps me with every single thing in my life.
Serenity?
As it's been shared here previously, my higher power is with me every single step of the way. It has helped me just let go of the fear. It has helped me, you know, go to it and go through it. It has helped me build trust and commitment. Trust has always been and will probably remain one of my just eternal wounds. And without a higher power, like I couldn't, there's no way that I would have the strength to walk through this on my own. And, you know, a lot of the times too, I think of my higher power as just, you know, the oneness of everybody, you know, of all of us coming together. You know, it's that we program, it's that we stuff that is the higher power for me, you know, on my own. I'm only good on my own, you know, but I add to that, and it only gets better from there. So I invite my higher power, along with me everywhere.
Thank you, Serenity. Appreciate all your shares. We're going to have Tom N. speak to us for a couple of minutes on how service and participation has helped in finding solutions in his recovery.
Thank you, Mike. You guys, great shares. I so appreciate it. Tom, grateful member of Al-Anon. You know, when I first got into program, I was encouraged by my sponsor to get a service commitment and participate at the home group level. And, you know, it really, didn't know where I fit in the program, but I really got a lot out of serving. And from there, I went to saying yes to everything because I wanted all of you to love me. And, you know, how silly is that? You know, like I have any control over that. The good thing is now, I had to end up actually walking into, or someone talked to me about taking on a GR position a year into program. And I'm like, well, you know, I think I can do it. And, you know, I didn't know what I was doing going into it, but the good part is you can always talk to somebody else who has served in those positions ahead of you, or, you know, and you can always find out what you need to do or what you can do better. The one thing I was worried about is some of my character defects popping out, but you know what? They pop out anyways, and that is fine. You know, I'm around people who love me and don't judge me, for the most part. And, you know, I get a lot out of it because I have the opportunity to grow through service. You know, if we don't have obstacles, how do we know what we're going to need to overcome? And, you know, it's getting in and doing the service work and having some of that stuff pop up gives us a chance to talk to our higher power about removing those defects that don't serve us and work on gaining some assets. You know, I didn't know I had any value prior to coming into program either. I knew I could do a couple of things good, but I didn't know what. So coming in and doing service work has allowed me to gain the self-esteem and confidence and find out what I can really accomplish and surround myself with some of the best people in recovery, because I think the people that serve get far more out of the people that just sit in the back of the room and do their 12 steps over and over again. You know, that's just my honest opinion. I love you all. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom, for that share. And we have another question for Rick. What are some obstacles that service has helped you overcome?
My ego. My sponsor said right from the beginning, don't read your own press notices. And boy, that was probably the best input she ever gave me. Another one, when I was area chair, she said, just because she had been area chair in her area, She said, just remember the person at the front is the one that gets shot at. And that was never more true than an area chair, because you're the person up at the front leading the assembly through the order of their business. And if people aren't happy with the way you're doing that, boy, they express it very, very clearly. And so I learned to kind of take criticism and input from people without internalizing it as a condemnation of my being. And that was a beautiful thing to learn. It was, and another obstacle was I shared a little bit about it, was really shutting off my brain and learning to listen to you. Because my MO was, I would be looking at you kind of with my hand like this, nodding my head up and down, formulating my response. I wasn't really hearing you. And when I was in the chair job, it was essential that I listen to you and that I hear you. And was very encouraging to the members in the assembly. It was a large assembly. We had about 500 groups in our assembly. And it encouraged them to do the same. And that was a brilliant thing that I could take into my professional life when I worked. I love saying that, when I worked. I'm now 6 years into retirement, so working is kind of somewhere back there. But I was able to carry it into so many things that I do. And inviting people in to collaborate. I don't have to do it all by myself. And if I'm inviting people in to collaborate, that means I don't micromanage what they do. Kind of invite them in, a job is given, and then, okay, go do the job. I don't have to do the job for you. So it really helped me release that kind of control gene that I have that wants to kind of dive in there and to do it, to get you to do it my way. So it showed me that there are many other ways to do it. And so, like I shared too, that it's not, they're the real important, that's a great question, because they're the things that I remember about being in service. I can really hardly ever tell you any of the issues we had discussed, but the process we used to reach a consensus was just, it's elegant when we as Al-Anon members are really willing to engage ourselves in the decision-making processes that are given to us. And if I can bring that into my daily life, as which I do, it has helped me tremendously.
Great, thank you, Rick. This next question is for Kitty. So Kitty, is there a particular change in your pre-Al-Anon behavior that participating in service has changed the most?
How have I changed? I have changed a lot. When I started in doing service and doing things for other people, you know, it just was opening me up to seeing different things that I never had done before. I had raised my children, so my whole life was just my job and raising my children. And when I got into Al-Anon, because my son was an alcoholic, it just really, really changed me. I met so many wonderful people. And then I did service and I worked with so many wonderful people. And that helped me walk through whatever I was going through. And service is just a wonderful thing. It made me keep coming back. And I think is the biggest thing for me was I had to come back because I had decided I would do that. And like I said before, when I make a commitment, I make a commitment. So that's a lot that service has done for me and opened myself up to be whatever I went through in my life to be really good. Actually, I met with my sponsor last week, and of course she's doing service for me and I have lots of sponsors. But every week we unpeel another piece of that onion, and that's what's so good. And that's what service does. Like today when I met with a sponsor, it just helps me all the time. And if I didn't do that, if I just, you know, stayed home and didn't put myself out there, it just wouldn't be any good. And that's why I really, really miss the live meetings. I do. Because I like to do service now. I really do. And that's all I can say is it gives you a feeling of gratification. I can do something and I can build my own self-esteem by doing it.
Thank you so much, Kitty. Next question is for Serenity. What lessons of service have you applied to your life?
Well, I've kind of answered this already, but I've applied a lot of lessons of service to my life. Specifically, don't make any grand assumptions. Like, don't get in my own way. I really, I get really paralyzed with fear if I don't just trust that this program works. And the only way that I know that this program works is by showing up. And as I said, to get to recovery, I've got to go through recovery. I've got to show up and make those service commitments. Now I can say that I am a woman of commitment. I don't have fear surrounding commitment any longer. I still am a bit gun shy sometimes. But some of my greatest lessons have been surrounding just learning how to lean into trust and safe people and just building those tiny little micro connections on top of that in order to get stronger and stronger and just, being of service so that I can carry the message, define serenity for myself and then echo that to the world.
Great. Thank you, Serenity. We have another question that came in. We have about 2 minutes left, so I'm going to give each of you a chance to, we'll see how far we get. And Serenity, while I've still got you on the line, I'm going to ask you this question. How do you or your group continue expressing attraction to newcomers after having greeted them at their first meeting? Do you keep talking to them week after week? Do you get them involved in the group or other ways? So how do you keep attracting those newcomers after you've greeted them? And if you could maybe keep it to about 30 seconds to a minute, and we'll get to Kitty and then Rick. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mike. That's a good question. My home group is New Leaf Women's Al-Anon Family Group in Bozeman. And we work really hard to set up newcomer meetings. Also, a lot of our service members are really good about building micro connections with these newcomers, making sure that people feel welcome and invited and, just giving warm smiles, warm welcomes, and following up with people. It's so important, I think, especially this day and age, to use the phone, follow up, and just check in on people. And all of our service members in my family group, my home family group, are very committed to just staying connected. As I said before, this is a we program. That's it.
Thank you, Serenity. Rick, how about you? How do you keep those connections with the newcomers?
Remember their name. Let them know that they're a person. And by speaking with them, greeting them at the first time, saying, hey, really, at the end, really nice to have you here with us this morning, because we do a Saturday morning meeting. Nice to have you with us here this morning. Hopefully to see you next week when they come back, remember their name and be able to greet them by name. That goes the distance right there. And share easily and gently, ask a few little questions, but don't be too heavy-handed with it. Just a really gentle, easy kind of, hey, what brought you here? Me too. I get it. A lot of head nodding. That's what's attractive. We attract, we don't promote. Who we are is good enough.
Great. Kitty, have you got anything you'd like to say on this?
I do the same as Rick does. I greet a person when they come in. I make sure that as soon as someone comes through the door, that I'm trying to greet them and I remember their name. But I also then follow up and make sure at the end of the meeting, I go to them and ask them if they have any questions and give them a phone list and give them my phone number and say, if you want to talk or anything that comes up, just give me a call. Feel free to do that. So that's the way I do it. And I've had a lot of the newcomers call me just, you know, to share. So I just listen. And that's what it's all about.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Kitty. And I'm going to turn it back over to Kay, our chairperson.
Thank you. We'll now close with the Al-Anon Declaration. Let it begin with me. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, let the hands of Al-Anon and Al-Anon always be there.
Let it begin with me.